free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Wednesday, May the 29th, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. Today, we're going to take a look at more Supreme Court decisions. Of course, the Supreme Politburo of the United States has spoken. And it's an amazing decision, a split decision. Kind of reminds me of what they did with Roe v. Wade. They took the baby, and instead of Solomon, who merely threatened to cut the baby in half, they actually cut the baby into thirds. You can kill the baby, the first third of the baby. And the Supreme Court decision they did today is along those lines. But we're going to take a look at it from a perspective of whether or not we should be following the Supreme Court. We now have laws about marriage being reintroduced in many states. And as we have the big corporations and big courts, which is really the way the Democrats choose to rule us, they cannot get grassroots support for what they want to do. So they decide that they will use the big courts, big corporations, as they're threatening various states, saying, well, we're not going to shoot movies there. Now you've got even Road and Track saying, well, where are all these different automobile companies? We've got four or five automobile companies that are building manufacturing plants in Alabama. Where do they stand on abortion laws there? We need to call them to heel. We need to put economic pressure on them using these big multinational corporations. Good luck with that. You want to see what happens to these big corporations whose primary product is pickup trucks and SUVs, not the electric cars? You want to tell these people who are buying pickup trucks and SUVs that they can't protect innocent life? Let's see how that works out. Let's have that fight. We need to stop being dictated to by these people. So we're going to take a look at the back and forth between Clarence Thomas and Ruth Darth Vader Ginsburg, their comments that they had. We're also going to take a look at what is happening with the wall, what is going on with the Bilderberg Conference. We're going to take a look at who's going to be there. I was very surprised to see the very first name on the list was Stacey Abrams. I'm trying to think. Stacey Abrams, who ran for governor and lost. These people who just keep failing upward, like Beto O'Rourke and Stacey Abrams. But of course, Stacey Abrams last week was pushing back at Buttigieg. So you got to have a gimmick, especially if you're a white guy. You got to somehow identify with one of the identity politics groups, because it's no longer a democracy party, which they talked about. And again, you know, we don't have a democracy in the United States. I understand that. We have a republic. But, you know, we do have elections. It's a democratic republic. It's a mixture of the two. But nevertheless, if you want to get elected in the demographic party, the identity politics party, you got to have a gimmick. You know, it's like the strippers from Gypsy. Got to have a gimmick. Electric lights, you know, dress up like a Spartan or whatever. You know, you got to have a gimmick. So his gimmick is the fact that he's gay. Beto O'Rourke's gimmick is the fact that he is trans-Hispanic. He's not Hispanic, but he identifies as Hispanic. And of course, Eric Swalwell is apologizing all over the place for being white. You know, finally, Beto said, I apologize for being a giant a-hole. And I tweeted out yesterday, said, finally, he apologized for something that's legit. It's okay, actually, to be white, except, of course, in the Democratic Party. But as Buttigieg came back and he said, this is not about identity politics, and we know that it is. Stacey Abrams came back and said, identity politics is exactly who we are. They're owning it. They're owning it. So I guess that was her ticket to Bilderberg. The other interesting individual that's there is Jared Kushner. What does that tell us about Jared Kushner? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Wednesday, May the 29th, year of our Lord 2019. I'm David Knight, your host, and we have a host of issues to look at. But I want to start out with something that's kind of a little bit light. This video clip of the Ohio weatherman getting angry at viewers because they're they're commenting on social media, get him off the air. I want to see the Bachelorette. And when I started laughing about this, my wife said, what is The Bachelorette? I said, well, we've never seen it. We don't watch television. We haven't had television since 1996. Don't need it. And you don't need it either if you listen to this program. I'll tell you everything you need to know. Sometimes I feel like this weatherman. Yeah, I told her, I said, well, The Bachelorette, it's kind of like the dating game, but much, much worse. From an entertainment standpoint, from a moral standpoint, you name it. But anyway, so he's telling people about tornado warnings that are coming. And this stuff is very serious. I mean, this is so bad. As you've seen the news, they had to pull out snow plows to clear all the debris off of the highways. That's how devastating these tornadoes were. But the people just wanted their bread and circuses. So I identify with this Ohio weatherman. Let's play a little bit of that clip here, video four.
It's also rainy. I was just checking social media. We have viewers complaining already. Just go back to the show. No, we're not going back to the show, folks. This is a dangerous situation, okay? It's nice rain. Think about this. This was your neighborhood. I'm sick and tired of people complaining about this. Our job here is to keep people safe, and that is what we're going to do. Some of you complain that this is all about my ego. Stop, okay? Just stop right now. It's not. I'm done with you people. I really am. This is pathetic. Sid, dangerous situation here. All right, I'm sorry I did that. It just really bothers me that we have people that don't care about other people's safety around here. That's just ridiculous.
Okay, and we're not trying to keep you safe here. I'm trying to keep you free. And we have a lot of people, yeah, why don't you just lighten up a little bit? Well, you know, that's not what we're here for. I'm here to warn you about what I see coming. And it's amazing to see how this stuff eventually percolates around. We've now got DeGeneva on Fox saying, I think this whole Russiagate thing was so the Obama administration could cover up their crimes and the fact that they've been using surveillance against political candidates in the past. I'm looking at this and like, this is news? We were warning you about this years ago, that this would be happening. We told you over a year ago that was what was going on with this. From the very beginning, we said they're covering up their own crimes. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this stuff. We covered it. That's last year's news here on InfoWars. So I don't feel obliged to go through all of the Game of Thrones that's now happening in Washington. If President Trump does a prosecution of these people after they try to persecute him. I will cover that. I'll enjoy that. I'll enjoy that just like we cover Alexandria Ocasional Cortex from time to time because that's how we lighten up. That's our comedy section here. We go to her for comedy relief. But seriously, let's talk about the dangers that are on their way. And I can tell you there is nothing more dangerous, nothing more indicative of an out of control centralized government that our founders did everything they could to both prohibit in the Constitution and to warn us about. Nothing personifies that more than the Supreme Court. I'm sorry, the Supreme Politburo. And again, I started calling it the Politburo because you've got Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, saying we need to expand the Supreme Court, the Supreme Politburo, to 15. We've got to add six more members there. And we need to let them pick who their colleagues are going to be. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because just like the Politburo had 15 members, the old Soviet Politburo, and they appointed who would join them in the Politburo. It's a good old boys club, right? And they decided every single policy issue for everybody there. And that's what we have with the Supreme Court. And let me explain to you, even Huawei understands this. Even, well, I should say, especially the Chinese communists understand this. Because the Chinese communists recognize a Politburo when they see one. And so they're going straight to the Politburo now. This is Huawei moving to overthrow the U.S. government, the Pentagon, the Trump administration, the Congress with its NDAA defense bill. This motion was filed late yesterday in district court. They asked to declare the 2019 National Defense Authorization Act unconstitutional in an update to a lawsuit that was brought by Huawei in March. They have repeatedly denied that they're controlled by the Chinese Communist government, military, or intelligence services. Yeah, just a coincidence. All the people on their board of directors. It's just a conspiracy theory. You know, kind of like the conspiracy theory, quote unquote, that I tell you about how DARPA has enabled and cleared the way for these people, in many cases contributing money through venture capital firms. The CIA's got its own venture capital firm. They established Google and Facebook and these other people to rule us. So, yeah, and the American government is using these internet companies as a, the invisible hand of the government inside of the glove of these Silicon Valley companies are ruling us. The Chinese are doing the same thing. The only thing is, the government will lie to you about what it's doing here in the United States, but they'll tell you the truth about what Huawei is doing. That's why RT and Sputnik and these others are good, because they'll lie to you about what Russia's doing. They'll lie to you about what Putin is doing, but they'll tell you the truth about the American government. And so the American government is telling you the truth about Huawei. They're telling you how dangerous 5G is if it's owned by the communists. What they won't tell you is how dangerous 5G is if it's owned by our own government. And they also don't give a flip about the health issues behind it either. But Huawei, here's the point. Huawei understands that if they can find a judge or two, they can stop the Trump administration, the Congress, the Pentagon, you name it. The entire government can be shut down. And Huawei understands this. They understand that the court system is a point of control for everything here, but especially against our individual rights. Let's take a look at some of the Politburo decisions that came down to us yesterday. The Supreme Politburo, court, ruled against an Alaska man in a free speech case. This came out yesterday. And what this was is a man who was arrested in retaliation for something that he said, his attitude towards the police or what he said to them. They said that he shouted too loudly and he stood too closely to them. Far be it from us to do that to our overseers on the socialist plantation. The Supreme Court, of course, backed the police, as they always do. They have repeatedly found that the police cannot be sued for not protecting you. You know, it says protect and serve on the side of the car. But if they choose not to do that, then nothing can be done to them. And if they feel at all afraid of you for any reason whatsoever, or for no good reason, you know, they can just say, well, I felt threatened. They can kill you. I just talked about the fact that you had multiple officers execute a man in the middle of the road who was on drugs, a father of, I forget how many kids, 38-year-old man, a white guy. So, you know, not a racism thing here. They pulled up and they kept telling him to get out of the road. And he goes, I'm sorry. He's not threatening anybody. He wasn't armed. They tasered him so many times and sprayed him with pepper spray so many times that the guy died. And they said they felt concerned about the fact that they were in the middle of the road. They felt that traffic would be a threat to them, and yet the traffic had stopped. So if the police feel threatened, they can kill you. If the police think that you look at them the wrong way or shout at them the wrong way, they can arrest you. And we have seen video after video of this, and now the Supreme Court has rubber stamped that. So much for the First Amendment. So much for redressing your grievances. Just make sure you do it very quietly. If you yell at the police and you have a grievance with the government, you know, do it in a very submissive way. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Let's take a look in a little bit more detail about the Supreme Court decision that I believe goes against the First Amendment, goes against free speech, because nothing can protect us from the police as far as the Supreme Court is concerned. And the police don't have to protect us from anything. They have no duty to protect. You can't sue the police if they don't protect you. And they are welcome to do anything they wish to you if they don't like you or they feel threatened by you. If they feel threatened by you, they can kill you. We've seen this over and over again. So what happened in this particular case? Again, this is a case, an event that happened back in 2014. It took 5 years to get to the Supreme Court. When we talk about this abortion case ruling that just came up, that goes back to 2016 when Mike Pence was still governor of Indiana. So these things take a very long time to reach the Supreme Court. That's why when we look at the recently passed legislation in Alabama, in Georgia, in Missouri, and so forth, if they're going to challenge this and take it to the Supreme Court, we're looking 3, 4, 5 years away before it gets to the Supreme Court, most likely. I mean, we've got a situation about whether or not you can ask this controversial question on the census as to whether or not somebody is a citizen. They're still thinking about that, thinking real hard. I mean, it was only the very purpose of the census to determine how many people there are on a state-by-state basis so they could allocate representation, political representation. And it was always a question until just recently. Out of political correctness, they took it down because they wanted open borders. They took it down. But that is the purpose of the census. And even the judge in California said, if you ask the question about a census, that means that people who are foreign citizens here are criminally trespassing. Those people won't be counted in California. And California will lose political power and money. Well, why should they get political power and money by being a sanctuary city, by inviting in foreigners? So that's going to inflate their congressional representation if they count the foreigners who are there. Let's just count the people in, I don't know, pick a foreign country. You know, let's count the people in Venezuela or whatever. Why not? Just add them to the people in California. I mean, Guatemala has already sent 1% of their population in about 8 months. So maybe just add Guatemala and count the number of people in Guatemala. We send them the census forms. They can fill them out and tell everybody they're identifying with California. They're trans-Californians. They just haven't transitioned yet. But they're coming. They're coming. They're on their way. They've started, well, they're not learning English, but I don't know what they would do to prepare to come in. They don't have to do anything. They just collect the welfare. We give them a big magnet of welfare. It's like, come on in. But, you know, we count the trans Californians in Guatemala, El Salvador, who are on their way eventually, soon. And then they can get more people in the Electoral College in California. California gets more representation in Congress. California gets more money. It should be a no-brainer. But let's get back to this case here, the Supreme Court. 2014, an event in Alaska called Arctic Man. It's a winter sports festival, as Chief Justice John Roberts described it in the opinion that he wrote. He said the festival is known as an event of both extreme sports and extreme alcohol consumption. Now, this individual was arrested, reports the AP, for disorderly conduct and resisting arrest after exchanging words with two troopers investigating underage drinking during the event. The officer said they arrested him because he initiated a physical confrontation, listen to this, by standing close to one of the troopers and speaking in a loud voice. I don't stand so close to me, right? That was by the police. So maybe Sting was onto something. Don't stand so close to me, or you'll get arrested and you'll spend 5 years trying to do something about it, and then the Supreme Court will shut it down. Charges against Bartlett were ultimately dismissed. In other words, there was no reason for him to be arrested, standing too close to the police, speaking in a loud voice. They dismissed the charges, but he said his arrest was in retaliation for comments that he made to the officers. And again, it isn't like we've never seen this happen before. We've seen people killed in retaliation for comments and attitudes We've seen people violently slammed to the ground, unarmed people, grandmothers, you name it. Roberts wrote that if Bartlett's arguments were to prevail, policing certain events like an unruly protest would pose overwhelming litigation risks. Let's not put any threat whatsoever against the police. They will not police themselves. They defend their actions. They won't get rid of officers who engage in excessive force. So let's shut down all avenues of grievances that can be redressed against them, like lawsuits, the Supreme Court said. So what actually happened? Well, there's a couple of different versions of what actually happened. According to one officer, he was asking partygoers to move their beer keg inside the RV because minors had been making off with alcohol. He said at that point, Bartlett began belligerently yelling at the RV owners that they should not speak to the police. Oh, well, there you go. Arrest him. Even if that were true. But Bartlett, he said he approached Bartlett, but Bartlett yelled at him to leave. And he said he did. Now, Bartlett tells a very different story. He said he was not drunk. He said he never yelled at this officer. He said it was a trooper who became aggressive when Bartlett refused to speak to him. We've seen that before, haven't we? We've seen them smash windows. We've seen them taser people. As a matter of fact, here in Texas, they tasered a man who was having an epileptic seizure in his car after an accident. And the police officer got angry because he refused to speak to him because he couldn't speak to him. So he tasered him. Several minutes later, Bartlett observed a different officer, second officer, in conversation with a minor, asking the minor whether or not the minor had been drinking. According to the police officer, Bartlett aggressively approached, stood between him and the teenager, yelled with slurred speech that the officer should not speak with the minor. The officer claims that Bartlett then stepped very close to him in a combative way. Oh, he stepped in a combative way. And so then he pushed him back. According to the troopers, the first trooper then sees the interaction, rushes over and arrests Bartlett. And when Bartlett was, quote, slow to comply with his orders, the officers forced him to the ground and threatened to tase him. Again, Bartlett tells a different story. He denied being aggressive. He claims he only stood close to the second officer in order to speak over loud music that was playing at the time, adding that he was slow to comply with the officer's orders because he did not want to aggravate a back injury. He now claims that after he was handcuffed, the first officer said to him, "Bet you wish you'd talk to me now, don't you?" So that's okay, according to Roberts and others. They can do that to us. We are their slaves, and they are the overseers on the plantation. Just shut up, take the free stuff from the Democrats, and don't complain. We'll be right back.
Minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Before we get to what the Supreme Politburo, court, said about abortion, let's go back and revisit some other issues that came up before them. I just talked about their pronouncement, their edict, their decree about free speech. Don't stand so close to the police. Don't speak too loudly to the police. They don't have to protect you, but they can kill you if they are offended or they feel threatened by you. Now we have Alabama, who has thrown down the gauntlet on Roe v. Wade, is now the first state to say, we're going to get the government out of the marriage business altogether. After the Supreme Court took it upon themselves, which they don't have the authority to say anything about marriage. This is what I've said from the very beginning. They have no authority. The state, especially the federal government, especially the Supreme Court, has no authority to decide about marriage one way or the other. Nothing in the Constitution. As a matter of fact, they are prohibited, expressly prohibited, from doing something like that by the Ninth and the Tenth Amendment. And so because they impose this and because the states are reluctant to take on the power of the Supreme Court that has been usurped by them, they're trying to find ways around that. Here's one way. The Alabama House of Representatives passed the bill from the Senate, so now it just has to be signed by the governor. The legislation would effectively nullify the state's involvement in most aspects of marriage. The state Senate passed the bill by a 26-0 margin. Understand, as I've said all along, we ought to be able to get people on the left and the right united to get government out of our lives. And I've said the right way to decide about this is to, first of all, cut the Supreme Court out one way or the other. And now you've got Democrats joining, seven Democrats joining with 19 Republicans in a unanimous vote. The bill would replace marriage licenses with a marriage certificate that is essentially a legal contract. The first time I ever heard about gay marriage, I was traveling with a Libertarian candidate in 1992, Andre Moreau. And somebody asked us a question about gay marriage. I thought, here we go. They always ask us these wild hypothetical situations. So that was 1992. You know, oh, you're libertarians. Oh, let me ask you about this. And I thought Andre Moreau had it exactly right back in 1992, 27 years ago. What he said was, he said, look, the government ought to be completely out of the business. It ought to be your decision. And you can set up a private contract and you can do whatever you want. And if you want employer benefits, instead of trying to force the government to force the employer to provide you with certain benefits, you negotiate that as part of your employment contract. Or you go to work for somebody that provides those kind of benefits. You have the ability to go to work for whoever you want. You don't have to have that mandated by the state government, by the federal government, by the Supreme Court. And he said, the only reason you people are trying to do this with the government is because you want to get the government to mandate benefits for you. And because you want the government to give you government benefits as marriage and so forth. He said, get the state out of it completely at every level. And if you go back and you look at the history of marriage, and I've talked about this before, we had the Supreme Court decisions come down in the first place. The government was never involved in marriage until, I guess it was England in the late 1700s, I think, early 1800s. I think it was the late 1700s. You had situations there that began to develop. Prior to that, of course, marriages would be recorded in the church. They would be the place of record for marriages where people would be married and so forth. But you had a situation where you didn't have a central repository of records, and you would have individuals who would get married to a woman in one town, and then they would go to another town and marry somebody else, another town and marry somebody else. And it became a problem after that individual died and they left behind children in each one of those towns with each of those wives. And then they started getting the courts clogged with all of these paternity suits and so forth. They threw up their hands and said, all right, that's it. We're going to take this over. We're going to have a central registry where we record this so that this doesn't happen. And basically, that's what they're proposing here. A legal contract, you record it with the government, end of story. End of story. And they said Alabamans, straight or gay, would no longer need permission from the state in order to get married. The legislation, as reported by New American, does maintain a couple of restrictions, however, on who can get who can record a legal marriage contract. For example, you can't do it if you're a child. So they have age limits on this. Well, that's going to be something that's not acceptable to the left or to the ACLU. I'm sure they're going to come back and challenge that. Or if you're already married. So bigamy, polygamy, that is out. If you've already recorded it and you still have that in effect, you haven't broken that contract, gone through that painful process. if you are not divorced, you've recorded this once, so you can't do it again while you still have one in effect. And again, they will probably come after that. I'm sure just wait for the ACLU and the Democrats to attack that one. But as they point out in New American, it's not just Alabama Similar legislation is under consideration in Oklahoma, Indiana, Kentucky, Missouri, Montana. A lot of states want to get out of this marriage business. In Alabama, of course, we had, back in February 2015, you had Roy Moore, when he was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, said, we have it in our Constitution, we've had a referendum here, and we're not going to be dictated to by a federal judge. Good for him. They removed him. Then the people voted him back in. See, this is the kind of person we need to stand up to the usurpation of power by the federal government. And it is why they are so hell-bent on taking him down, including the Republican Party. We just had Donald Trump Jr. come out attacking him and saying, you're the only person who couldn't get elected against Doug Jones. You're the only Republican. Well, guess what, Donald Trump Jr.? There are more important things than getting Republicans elected, because we've seen too many Republicans, including people that you know and support, who don't have any principles that they will stand for. And I'm sick and tired of people who just stand for election but don't stand for any principles. They're just politicians. It's a revolving door. They're a dime a dozen. And people like you are a dime a dozen as well. It's time we get somebody who's going to stand up for the Constitution, stand up for the 10th Amendment. You know, the other thing that he said, which is one of the reasons why they came after Roy Moore, and I firmly believe that those allegations, those unproven allegations, were coming from Mitch McConnell and the Republican establishment, because Roy Moore had the hubris to go to Washington and say, yeah, I'm going to take on these guys. I'm going to take on Mitch McConnell. I'm coming for you, Mitch, after he won the primary. And then all this stuff happened at the last minute. Yeah, that was hubris. Is there anybody who runs for public office that doesn't have a healthy dose of pride? I don't think anybody from any party, including President Trump, is lacking in the pride category whatsoever. So, yeah, you can criticize Moore for that. But one of the things that he said was, there is no such thing as a dreamer. If only Donald Trump Sr. would say that, would give us the honest truth. If only Donald Trump Sr. had the backbone to say there's no such thing as a dreamer. They tried multiple times to pass the Dream Act. They never did. There is no such thing as a dreamer. There is a DACA executive order, and we have a federal judge that tells President Trump he can't undo the executive order from the previous administration. How ridiculous is that? Get a spine. Stand up to this judicial tyranny. When we come back, we're going to talk about abortion and what the Politburo has now decreed about that. It's an unbelievable, unbelievable split decision. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Folks, we're going to take a look at what's going on with the amazing abortion decision. We've got one more before we get to it that the Supreme Court came out with. A transgender school bathroom policy has now been dictated by the Supreme Court, right? They set all policy for us. They tell us where we can and cannot go to the bathroom. They tell us who we can and cannot marry, who we have to worship. It's absolutely amazing that we let them get away with this. And the only person I've seen stand up to them was Chief Justice Roy Moore. Now he's being attacked by Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr. Don't run. You can't get elected. Well, yeah, not if they put dirt out like they did the last time at the last minute from the Republican Party. Before we get back to the Supreme Court, however, and what's going on with the transgender agenda, it's kind of interesting. The Muslims are not putting up with this. Even in the UK, the Muslims shut down the LGBT agenda, indoctrinating their kids. Ah, that's where Christians fear to tread, isn't it? That's right. And we're going to talk about that as well. Before we get to that, Just want to tell you about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We've got our Memorial Day specials still in place. We have products 40, 50, 60% off. At 60% off, we have ExtendWise and Myco ZX Plus. At 50% off, we have Super Male Vitality, Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix. Again, you can get all of your essential vitamins and minerals without swallowing a lot of pills. Just put them in a drink mix, and you can make a smoothie out of that or whatever you want. Make it taste any way you want. You don't have to swallow a lot of pills. A Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off. Bod Ease, our anti-inflammatory product. Turmeric and many other natural ingredients to fight inflammation naturally and effectively, 50% off for Bod Ease. We have Turbo Force, 40% off. Our protein bars, 40% off. And as an exclusive special for listeners of this show, you can save 10% off of Wake Up America Coffee, the vital ingredients of this early morning show. And I'm sure all of you listening in various places, depending on what time zone you're in, can be very early. 100% organic coffee, Wake Up America Coffee. Just use the code WAKEUP at checkout to save 10%. And we have two different blends. We have Patriot Blend or Immune Support Blend. Use the code WAKEUP at checkout to save 10% off of Wake Up America Coffee at InfoWarsStore.com. And don't forget to follow us on YouTube, YouTube.com/Libertarian, or on Twitter at Libertarian. Those are two handles. And you can find our shows, of course, archived at InfoWars.com. InfoWars.com/David-Knight-show. Okay, so as we're talking about marriage, and we're talking about the fact that Alabama has now, essentially, except for the governor's signature, has now passed unanimously in the House of Representatives, Democrats and Republicans said, we're going to get out of the marriage business. We're just going to record the contracts that people make between themselves. And that's all we need to do. And you've got other states doing that now. Oklahoma, Indiana, Kentucky, Missouri, Montana. Why? Because they're sick and tired of the micromanagement of the federal government and the edicts of the Supreme Court. And so New American asks, why wouldn't everybody be happy about that? I mean, I think that is the right way to go. Well, it's not about that. You got to understand, the LGBT groups don't want freedom. They don't want liberty. They don't want to be tolerated. They don't want you to tolerate them. They demand that you celebrate them. And they want to make what is abnormal normal, and they want to make what is normal hateful. And they want to be able to hate you for that. They want to say that you are worthy of hate if you don't declare them worthy of worship. This is about overthrowing the culture. It is not about liberty. It's not about tolerance. It's not about a middle way to just leave everybody alone. They do not want that, and they want your children. Just take a look at this, and the Supreme Court's going to let them do it here. Supreme Court declined yesterday to hear a case challenging a Pennsylvania school district's bathroom policy that allows transgender students to use bathrooms of their choice. It was the Alliance Defending Freedom that took the case up to the Supreme Court. They argued that the district's policy violates student privacy. You think? You think? Do you think your daughter feels violated when they have a guy who says, I identify mentally as a female, but he's physically still male? When he gets into the locker room, gets into the showers, gets into the bathrooms, I say, well, they make private accommodations available as well. Really, do they? How many private bathrooms do they have versus the general bathrooms that they're going to let boys in with the girls? I guess the Supreme Court, if it was anything else, it would say, well, I think maybe those long lines for the private bathroom, maybe that is an undue burden. Oh, but not when it comes to pushing the LGBT agenda. The person who was pushing this lawsuit said the school district provides private bathrooms and locker rooms to all students who do not feel comfortable sharing such spaces with other transgender or cisgender. So that's what I mean. You take normal and you turn it into something abnormal. You relabel it. That's their gift. They use labels. And by using labels, they seize the high ground when it comes to arguments. And so we all have to bow down and use terms like cisgender and transgender. No, we don't. Just call it normal. I mean, we talked about the psychologist who got booted off of social media He was internationally recognized as an expert studying this stuff. And he said, he was sympathetic. He said, look, let them even get it paid for, sex change operation paid for by the government, but only for adults, not for our children, not for our children in the schools. He said, let them live that way for 2 or 3 years, but they have to be, they have to live that way for 2 or 3 years. They have to be 21 years of age. They have to know what they're doing, an age of consent. And then he would, because he's Canadian, he'd let the government pay for it. But see, they don't want that. As a matter of fact, they want the opposite of that. They want to pretend that children as young as 8 years old here in Texas, I've talked about it, SaveJames.com. The man who was here in the studio talked to us about how a federal judge, a Texas judge, in a family court, because the mother wanted the boy to identify as a girl, is going to try to force him to pay for a sex hormone change. It's going to be irreversible of this, of his son when he turns 8. And he says, I will go to jail before I do that. You want to support him? SaveJames.com. And if you want to get your kids out of these crazy schools, I talked to Alex Newman last week. He's doing a seminar called Rescuing the Children, Saving Our Country. You got to get your kids out of this system, this crazy system that is being dictated from Washington on down, from the Department of Education to the Supreme Politburo, the court. They are the ones who are pushing this agenda on you, on your children. You better figure out what they're doing. You better pay attention. You ought to go to that seminar that he's running, Rescuing the Children, Saving Our Country. Alex Newman, he's going across the country. If you want to find out where it is, go to libertysentinel.org/tour. You'll see the various places that it's going to be. You better wake up to this. Because, you know, Christians are afraid to stand up for their values. Just had the UK Foreign Secretary say, Christians are the most persecuted people in the world, and we are afraid to say anything about it here in Britain out of fear of being politically incorrect. And he was exactly right. But see, the Muslims don't care about that. When people tried to force an LGBT agenda on their kids, they said, we're not having it. They had equality lessons, which is kind of like what the Democrats are trying to do now with their Equality Act. That's the beard. So that's what I say. They always pick the terminology. Well, who could possibly be against an Equality Act or against a equality lessons? So police are investigating claims that the LGBT activists were harassed, intimidated, and pelted with eggs because Muslim parents were angry that LGBT issues were being forced down their children's throats. The course was put on hold after that. They said during Ramadan, out of deference to the Muslim parents, but many have urged for it to continue now. But they haven't. They haven't. And as Breitbart London was reporting, the Muslims are exiting. There is a mass exodus of the Muslims from the school, 600 children taken out of class because they don't want their kids brainwashed with the LGBT stuff. But you're not doing that for your kids, are you? Yeah. We've got Ilhan Omar saying we need a foreigner's perspective on foreign policy. Maybe we need their perspective when it comes to taking care of our kids. We don't really care. We just turn it over to the government. We don't care about our families. We don't care about our future. We don't care about our country if we're going to abandon our kids to the state. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Broadcasting with the power of the First Amendment. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I'm going to wait before I get into the abortion decision by the Supreme Court till we get to the next segment because it's longer. So let's talk a little bit about Chick-fil-A. I retweeted the tweet from Governor Abbott here in Texas, and he says, Well, I signed the bill to stop discrimination from businesses like Chick-fil-A. And he says, I'm eating lunch right now. I'll decide later. And he's got the picture he has is his laptop with the article about the bill. And then in front of it, he's got his Chick-fil-A dinner that he's eating at Chick-fil-A. And so we've got a Mississippi State professor now, after we've had the discrimination against Chick-fil-A in the beginning in the San Antonio airport, said, we don't want you here. You gave money to the Salvation Army. Shame on you. You gave money to the Federation of Christian Athletes, and they define marriage differently than we define it. So we want to put them out of business. And now they got the FAA saying they're going to investigate San Antonio's ban of Chick-fil-A from its airport. Good, good, finally. You know, doing something to shut down this kind of weaponized cultural Marxism, which is really what it is. Intimidating people, saying, those views are not going to be allowed, comrade. That speech is not going to be allowed, comrade. We will shut you down. We'll shut your business down. We'll shut you off of social media. We'll do whatever we need to make sure that we silence people that we disagree with. That is Marxism. You can complain about the term cultural Marxism all you want, but folks, it's not even cultural Marxism. That's just flat out Marxism masquerading as cultural manipulation, cultural engineering. We ought to reject both of those being done by the government, being done by Facebook and others. But now we got, of course, universities do this all the time. Mississippi State professor, reports Breitbart, uses an exam to blast Chick-fil-A for promoting American values. This was on a business ethics exam. If you want to learn about business ethics, you ought to go to Chick-fil-A and learn from them. My daughter works for them. They do a great job of training people on how to serve customers. It really has become a lost art in this country. Most of the places that I go, the employees have an attitude like I'm somehow bothering them, interrupting them, looking at their phone. That's not the case at Chick-fil-A. And so he questioned them for their so-called commitment to traditional American values. And he weighted the question like this. And I don't even know if this is true what he says about Cracker Barrel. He says, for a period in the 1990s, Cracker Barrel refused to hire homosexuals. The company based this policy on its so-called commitment to traditional American values. More recently, companies like Chick-fil-A and Hobby Lobby have adopted similar policies. Can you believe that? What an outright lie that is. He doesn't like Hobby Lobby because Hobby Lobby said, we're not going to be forced by the Obama administration to pay for abortions for our employees through an insurance program. They fought that to the Supreme Court, and they won. Now, this little Marxist professor in Mississippi, a southern state, doesn't like that. And there's absolutely nothing like that going on at Chick-fil-A either. As one student said, however, if you don't agree with his opinion, then Professor Clifford will only give you half credit on assignments, said one anonymous student when they were grading the professor. They get a chance to comment on him. I wish I'd known beforehand what his views were so I could write my essay responses tailored to him. That is Marxism. Meanwhile, other people are saying, if you should treat others the way Chick-fil-A treats you. Yeah, that's the Christian ethic that they have. Here at Chick-fil-A, I overheard a supervisor sharing with a new employer, here at Chick-fil-A, we treat our colleagues in the back kitchen as we treat our customers. One customer told me of a time where two Chick-fil-A managers helped him to jump his car, so forth, on and on and on. They came out top, as the company most likely get your order right and most likely to be friendly. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Let's take a look at the Supreme Court decision on the abortion case that came before them. This was a law that was passed in Indiana back in 2016, 3 years ago. Mike Pence was still governor of Indiana before he was elected vice president. Takes a while for these cases to percolate through until we can get all the way to the top of the Supreme Politburo, sorry, court, who will then put out their decree telling us what we may and may not do in our private lives. This should be rejected by everybody, left and right. CNN reports it this way. In an unsigned opinion, the justices let stand a lower court opinion that invalidated part of an Indiana law that said the state can ban abortion solely motivated by race, sex, or disability of the fetus. The court did allow a provision requiring clinics to bury or to cremate fetal remains to take effect. So let me just put it this way. I'll sum it up differently than CNN did. Here's what the Supreme Politburo said. You can kill babies because of their sex. You can kill babies because of what race they are. You can kill babies because you believe they may have a disability, but you need to treat their remains with respect as a human being. How about that? Is that what, that's really what they did, isn't it? Clarence Thomas said because they refused to take a position, and actually he kind of skirted it. He says, well, they don't want to talk about this situation about aborting kids because of sex, race, or disability. And as I've talked about this, I still haven't heard anybody else talk about the long-term effects on women who are not aborted of having sex-based abortions. I called it a female genocide. NPR talks about a femicide, but they don't talk about it in terms of abortion. But we've seen in India and China, 35 to 40 million more men than women. Why? Because about the time they started doing abortions there, they were also able to determine the sex of the baby. And because of preferences there, they decided that they wanted boys instead of girls. And as I said, if that were to be done here, it would probably go the other way. We don't want boys in our society here in America anymore. But in India and China, they do. And so they have 35 to 40 million more men in each of those countries. What has that resulted in? It's resulted in a humongous increase in both sexual assault and rape and human trafficking, capturing women from other places and putting them into sexual slavery as prostitutes. As a matter of fact, in China, there's a booming trade of women taken from North Korea. That is one of North Korea's big exports. Women sold into prostitution into China because China followed a one-child policy and people there decided that they didn't want girls. Clarence Thomas said, you're going to have to deal with these issues soon. He said the Constitution itself is silent on abortion. Well, you know, that's kind of, I don't know. I don't know if that's really even true. It's kind of like saying the Constitution is silent on killing people with cars or spying on them with their own computers or their own phones. It's really not silent about the latter part. Now, murder is something that was not a federal crime. That was to be done by the states. The states didn't give that power to the federal government. They retained that power under the 9th and 10th Amendment. Nevertheless, just because we've got a different way to kill people or because we've got a different way to spy on people because of different technology doesn't mean that the moral and ethical principles change. He went on to say, enshrining a constitutional right to an abortion based solely on the race, sex, or disability of an unborn child, as Planned Parenthood advocates, would constitutionalize the views of the 20th century eugenic movement. And again, the Supreme Court, I agree with Clarence Thomas, and I'm happy that he went to Margaret Sanger, called her out explicitly. But we got to get over this idea that the Supreme Court writes law. We got to get over this idea that's even worse, that the Supreme Court defines what the Constitution is or amends the Constitution. That is how they have come to rule our lives. And that's what Clarence Thomas is saying. And he's wrong about that, but he's right about abortion. This is what he has to say. This law and other laws like it promote a state's compelling interest. And actually, it's the state's power. They don't have a compelling interest. They have a state power that they didn't give to you, Clarence Thomas, that they didn't give to you, Ruth Bader Ginsburg or John Roberts. You don't have that power. They retained that power. They didn't give that to you. Nevertheless, they want the states should be able to prevent abortion from becoming a tool of modern-day eugenics, he wrote. And he also went on to talk about the fact that Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger was particularly open about the fact that birth control could be used for eugenic purposes. And that's why he's talking about this, because when you talk about getting rid of babies because you don't like their sex, because you don't like their race, or because you think that they're inferior because they've got a disability, you're talking eugenics by definition. No other justice, including Thomas's four fellow conservatives, would even go there. That's how bad it is. You understand that? Only Clarence Thomas will call this what it is: Planned Parenthood eugenics. It is black genocide. And only he will call it that. The other conservatives, quote-unquote conservatives, are afraid to say that, won't even say that. But then even Clarence Thomas says, well, you know, we got to be careful that we don't change the Constitution to do this or change the Constitution to do that. What BS? Even he's BSing you. And so you had one CNN Supreme Court analyst say, it's quite possible that Thomas's opinion is therefore less of a prediction as to where the court is likely to go than as an aspiration. That's right. It's just an aspiration. We don't have any way to get this done unless we take back the power at the state level with the 10th Amendment. That's why I had Michael Bolden from the 10th Amendment Foundation on yesterday. Was it yesterday? I think it was. It was yesterday. The days go by and run together in my mind. But that's why we talked about this. Unless we take it back at the state, and we can do that. We've seen that with the marijuana laws. That's why that's so important. We had our freedom usurped, not just by the federal government, but by the United Nations conservatives when it comes to the war on drugs. First of all, it hasn't worked. It's been a total failure. It has failed to help anybody. It's locked up a massive amount of our population. It has corrupted our legal system, corrupted our police, and it's destroyed the Bill of Rights, and it hasn't helped anybody. The drug problem is arguably much worse than it was 48 years ago. So it hasn't worked for half a century. But it was a UN agenda that was created in 1961 that Richard Nixon called his war on drugs, quoted it verbatim. And you remember when the first states started pushing back and said, we're going to allow marijuana for legal use, it was United Nations that came in and said, you can't do that. Well, let's see the United Nations enforce it. Right now, they don't. Now, if we have politicians who say, well, the United Nations spoke, therefore we must obey because United Nations changed our constitution, United Nations changed our law. Can you imagine that? I can, because I've seen that happen with the Supreme Court. If we have politicians who abdicate their power, their authority to the federal government, if we have federal politicians who abdicate their power, their authority to the Supreme Court, as this Congress and this president and every president before him in my lifetime has done, then we will wind up one day with a situation where the same politicians will say, well, the United Nations has spoken, so we have to obey. And we stopped that. We stop that at the state level. State nullification of the federal war on drugs, of the United Nations war on drugs, and we can stop their meddling in our private affairs. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. Let's take a look at the rest of the Supreme Court decision, and then we'll take a look at some of the reactions to it. Again, what the Supreme Court decided yesterday in a split decision over the Indiana law was that, yes, you can kill a baby based on sex, you can kill a baby based on race, you can kill a baby because you think it may be disabled, but you have to respect the remains. You have to treat them as if it was human, properly bury or cremate the remains. These are the people that we allow to rule our lives. Clarence Thomas, when they got to the one decision, and again, what they did in terms of the requirement of disposing of the baby's remains, The Supreme Court, in a 7-2 decision, there wasn't even really much of a discussion about that. They said, well, the Supreme Court has already acknowledged that the state has a legitimate interest in proper disposal of fetal remains, and the only two people who voted against that were Ginsburg and Sotomayor. Even Kagan and Breyer voted with the conservatives on that. But just look at that language there. The court has acknowledged the state has a legitimate interest. No, the state has powers. See, you don't. Again, they've turned the Constitution upside down and inside out. The Ninth and Tenth Amendment says if we didn't list anything, that means that we still have it. And oh, by the way, if we didn't expressly give it to you, you don't have it. We retain those powers in the states and we retain those rights as individuals. And what they're saying here is that, well, you know, we can acknowledge that you have a legitimate interest. And if we acknowledge that you have a legitimate interest, then we have granted that privilege to you because you don't have any rights according to the Supreme Court. It's only what they say you can do. Completely opposite of what the Constitution says. Clarence Thomas went on to talk about the eugenics aspect of this because that's really what is in view when you're talking about killing babies because of sex, race, and disability. He said the statute makes it illegal for an abortion provider to perform an abortion in Indiana when the provider knows the mother is seeking the abortion solely because of the child's race, sex, diagnosis of Down syndrome, disability, or related characteristics. Put differently, this law and other laws like it promote a state's compelling interest in preventing abortion from becoming a tool of modern-day eugenics. And he went on to say, whereas Margaret Sanger believed that birth control could prevent unfit people from reproducing, abortion can prevent them from being born in the first place. Many eugenicists, he said, therefore supported legalizing abortion, and abortion advocates, including future Planned Parenthood President Alan Guttmacher, endorsed the use of abortion for eugenics reasons. And just so that you understand where the lines are drawn here, folks, Margaret Sanger's treasurer was Prescott Bush, the patriarch of the Bush clan. And the Bushes and their foundations have, even as they have talked about, oh, we need to stop abortions being funded at the public club, they fund it to a much greater level with their private foundations. That's the ugly truth about the establishment Republican Party. So anyway, this is, as we look at this, it was a very long decision, 20-page opinion on abortion that Clarence Thomas wrote, very angry about black genocide, but still not supporting the 10th Amendment. As we look at reactions to this, Illinois is now joining the liberal states that are expanding abortion. Remember, the Supreme Court in Roe v. Wade gave their decree that babies could be killed in the first third of the pregnancy. The first trimester, didn't mandate that they be protected in the second two. They said, we'll leave that up to the states. And so now you've got a lot of states. You had California, New York, Vermont, Virginia, now Illinois, the usual suspects, and probably more, at least those five, are expanding the point at which you can kill a baby. The Illinois House voted 64-50. To rescind prohibitions on late-term abortions. And they said in this article by AP, they said, well, this is a reaction, a justified reaction, because at least six states have adopted steep restrictions on or bans on abortion. Neighboring Missouri just last Friday outlawed abortions past the eighth week of pregnancy. So, therefore, it's justified. Well, you got, you know, there's no outrage except in the public's mind about what we see being done by in New York or by the Virginia governor, talking about killing babies full term. That's what started this. And there are just as many of these Democrat states owning infanticide as there are Republican states that are trying to stop it. But what they can't accomplish at the grassroots level, what they can't accomplish in elections and so forth, they want to push by using the courts and by using corporations. Hollywood Studios, reports Variety, Hollywood Studios, except for Netflix, are trying to stay silent on harsh abortion laws. So Variety and the left are pushing them. You need to speak out. You need to put pressure on these people, you corporations. As I said at the beginning of the program, I was disgusted to see Road and Track write an article about, oh, well, look, you know, Alabama's got horrible abortion laws. We don't like those abortion laws. So we want these car manufacturers, Toyota and others, who are setting up shop, and Mercedes was another one, I think. But the people who have car manufacturing facilities in Alabama, Road and Track is calling on them to use economic pressure to push back against those horrible people in Alabama who want to stop killing babies. Isn't that disgusting? I'm disgusted with Road and Track, and I will be disgusted with any corporations that do that. They can forget about selling me any cars. But Netflix is a little bit easier to make that decision. I mean, you know, we don't buy cars every day, but you know, you buy Netflix every month, don't you? They are the ones who are proud to stand for infanticide. They said the only company to respond to Variety's inquiries, their pleas for intervention, was Netflix. And Netflix said, we will work with the ACLU and others to fight it in court. Given the legislation has not yet been implemented, we will continue to film there, while also supporting partners and artists who choose not to. Should it ever come into effect, we would rethink our entire investment in Georgia. I would suggest to you that maybe it is time for you to rethink your monthly payments to Netflix. Why are you supporting these people? It was a year ago, as I tweeted out yesterday. You can follow me on Libertarian. I saw this article. I tweeted it out yesterday. I said, this is coming exactly a year after we learned that Netflix had given a multi-year contract to the Obamas, Barack and Michelle, to propagandize us with their left-wing politics. An undisclosed dollar figure. We know that it's a multi-year contract, but they didn't even talk about how much money they're giving the Obamas, Netflix. And when you look at this stuff, the picture that was there was Hulu, and it was Margaret Sanger's Handmaid's Tale and so forth. When you look at that, think about not only the money that you invest in, which is not a lot. It's really the time that you're investing with Netflix, with Hulu, with Amazon. These people who want to propagandize you and your family, what are they doing to the minds and the morality of your children? Why are you investing the time, let alone the money, in these filthy corporations? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.
All right, welcome back. I got one more thing to say. As we see, Missouri is about to shut down the last abortion clinic in the state this week. And why? Is this a health crisis for women in the state, as Planned Parenthood says? I said, this is a real public health crisis. I think it's really more like a financial crisis for them in the brewing. It's the Missouri Department of Health that notified Planned Parenthood of three issues, they said, that can impact their license renewal. Planned Parenthood said, well, we'll address two of them. Here's what they were. Adjusting who in the clinic provides state-mandated counseling. So I don't know who was giving the counseling before. I mean, you might want to have somebody who is actually knows what they're doing with that. But adding also an additional pelvic exam for abortion patients, might think that would be important and something that you would be interested in doing if you're interested in women's health, as they say they are. And then here's a third request. They say, well, we can't really comply with this. They have seven doctors at the clinic who are doing abortions. And the health clinic says, the health department says that they want to talk to these doctors about what they say are deficient practices. Planned Parenthood said it only has two of those doctors as employees. The other five physicians work at the facility as residents in training. And so when you look at potential deficient practices, maybe it's because these people are in training. Furthermore, these five abortionists who are in training refuse to be interviewed by the state. But of course, you know, this is a crisis if you stop them from doing abortions. If you stop people who are in training who refuse to talk to the health services, then that's an issue that impacts women's health. For the negative. No, I think if you let these people who refuse to be interviewed continue to do abortions, that should be the health issue. Meanwhile, we got Taylor Swift promising that she's now going to get political. And I said yesterday, I tweeted out, I said, well, I can hardly wait to hear her historical, ethical, and political commentary in her lyrics. I said, maybe she could get AOC to write the lyrics for her because I think they would be a perfect match. You know, she could sing what AOC writes, and maybe she could start doing comedy music videos, kind of like Weird Al. We could call it Weird Alexandria music, right? She said, I definitely think there's political undertones in the new music that I've made. You think? Yeah, there usually is political, ethical, spiritual undertones and all this stuff. Maybe she's just realizing it. But you should realize it as well. In October 2018, she shocked the entertainment world with her endorsement, reports Breitbart, of a Senate candidate and a Democrat running for House of Representatives, citing their stellar record of LGBT issues. But, you know, again, I think we ought to have AOC writing her lyrics because she's out there after telling everybody that we're going, her new Green Deal is going to keep us from having red meat. And she's not finished with messing with our diet. She also tweeted out that you know, she doesn't like cauliflower. And it's not because it's white, folks. You know, it's because it's colonial. It's colonial. And we need to be growing more culturally significant. That was her term. Culturally significant plants like the yucca plant. And as some people said, by the way, the yucca plant will not grow in the climate there in New York, but never let that be a deterrent. Babylon Bee took her on with a parody. They said she's disappointed to learn that the free market isn't a grocery store where you don't have to pay for anything. I tweeted that out. I said, yeah, next she'll learn that Whole Foods sells things other than donuts and pretzels. And CJ said, or onion rings, right? Yeah, Whole Foods. They do sell things other than food that has holes in them. This is what passes for political commentary. And I'm sure that this is kind of the level of discussion and insight that we're going to get from Taylor Swift as well. I want to get ready with video clip number three. You know, I didn't get a chance yesterday to talk about what happened over the weekend with Martin Luther King and the tapes that came out. I think it's very important for us to understand what's going on here. And these are not new allegations. I mean, the detail of what has come out is new. But it's been alleged for a very, very long time that Martin Luther King was involved in multiple affairs. They're saying now 40 extramarital affairs. And then they add the shocker that he was looking on and encouraging a colleague to rape someone. That's something that has not been put out there before. The difference, I think, and why this is happening now is because it's very important for the left. Again, they ignored all this stuff. They ignored all of the issues about plagiarism that came out about Martin Luther King. They ignored all the issues about sexual immorality. That was no problem. No problem at all for them before. I think, quite frankly, there's a couple of things involved here. I think it's important for us when we look at historical figures, and this has been going on for quite some time, that we take somebody like Voltaire, for example. Voltaire, summarized by, I may disagree violently with what you have to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Now, he didn't say that. He didn't say that. That is a summary of what he wrote about free speech. Voltaire himself was a thoroughly despicable individual. He was a partner with Rousseau, a supporter of the French Revolution, that type of thing. He would be a communist, except that they didn't use that term at that time. Somebody who I could not respect at all as a man, but that message is very important. And what we have today is people attacking the man, like Martin Luther King, because they don't like his message of judging somebody by the content of their character instead of the color of their skin. That is a message that the Democrats don't want out there. And so Martin Luther King has to be vilified and destroyed, just like founders of this country who wrote the principles that guide us in terms of liberty and the Constitution and so forth. Many of them were fine, upstanding men. And they all go through their lives to try to find anything they can to destroy them. And I'm not excusing anything that Martin Luther King is alleged to have done here. I'm just saying we've known about that for quite some time. Not about the alleged encouragement of rape and looking on and laughing as another pastor is raping someone. That's new. But we have to distinguish between the difference between the man and the message. And you have to understand these people are trying to tear our culture down. They're trying to tear down the principles that this culture was built on. That's why they attacked not only Martin Luther King, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Christopher Columbus. Were those guys perfect? No. Not at all. But they want to tear down the foundations of society. And I would suggest there's also something else going on here, too. Martin Luther King's niece has been on this program multiple times. I've talked to her. We've talked to her at InfoWars. She's been a very articulate advocate against abortion, against the black genocide. And I think this is a good way for them to attack that as well. She's been one of the most effective spokespersons that they've had, because we all know that this, and Clarence Thomas certainly knows, this is directed against the black community more than any other community, this abortion process, the Planned Parenthood process. So I think they've got a couple of different birds they're trying to kill as they throw stones at Martin Luther King, not to defend his plagiarism, not to defend his infidelity, not to defend any of that. Just understand that there's a difference between a man and a message, no more than I would defend Voltaire's personal life, but I would defend to the death his defense of free speech. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. Joining us now is Michael Volpe. He has been working as a freelance investigative journalist since 2010. As he says, dedicating himself to exposing the wrongdoing of the powerful. And he has done exactly that. He helped to expose what was going on at the Memphis VA Medical Center that back in 2014, 2015, that led to the dismissal of the hospital's director. And it began a major national discussion of what was happening with the abuse at and the lack of care in the VA medical centers across the country. He has focused most recently on cases of child kidnapping and of police raids that are being increasingly used to enforce custody orders. Going back to the beginning of May, remember we had the case in Arizona? I've talked about that. I talked to a representative from the group there that is helping to oversee that. Going back, and he references this when he talked about the situation at the beginning of May in Arizona, where you had the police kick down the door of a child and kidnap that child because the parents did not want to take the child who had a fever. They said the child was over the fever. The child was. They took that child by force away from the parents. That is a pattern. And he's now got an article talking about how that is happening across the country. Also talking about medical kidnapping that is going on repeatedly across the country. I've talked to Marty Gottesfeld's wife many times, a guy who has been treated and is being held like a terrorist in the communications management unit there in Indiana because he exposed the kidnapping of Justina Peltier, held for 16 months by Boston's Children's Hospital. That's affiliated with Harvard. But I wanted to talk to Michael about his newest article that just came out last Thursday. Police raids are being used to enforce custody orders, sending kids back to abusive parents and to reunification camps. Oh, let's talk to Michael now. Thank you for joining us, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, let's talk about, you said there's seven different cases in multiple states. You got one in North Carolina. It's not just Arizona where this type of thing is happening. Give us kind of an overview of what's happening in these seven cases. This is a very lengthy article that you have at the Daily Caller. Give us an overview of what's going on.
Sure. Basically, what happens is abusive people, often men, but not always, they have all kinds of pull with the court, and kids don't want to live in an abusive situation, so the court encourages or puts out orders to have police take them by force, because that's the only way that you can get kids out of a safe environment and put them into an unsafe one. There was two cases out of the state of Connecticut. It's the same judge, Elizabeth Bizzuto. She either enforced an order or signed an order, and then the police showed up in one case at a school, and you can see it on the video. The kids are taken by force out of the school. In the other case, there's a woman named Lori Thainer. Multiple times, her kids kept running away from her ex-husband, and he would put out complaints, and then the police would show up and take him by force. In one case, in one time with her, with his ex-wife, they said, either your kids go with me or we'll put you in jail. So it was coercion, threat, however you want to describe it. The worst case is out of Minnesota. It's the Ruckey case, which has been featured everywhere, including 2020, and it's been mischaracterized. David Ruckey is an abusive man. He's got police reports in three counties. 10 different people took out restraining orders against him, including his five children, his ex-wife, two neighbors, a mailman, and his in-law. His son said he put a gun to his head when he was, I think, 7 or 8 years old. He chased after his daughter until she had to barricade herself on her house on her 13th birthday, and the courts insisted that the kids stay with him. So on April, so they were driven. At one point, they were living with their maternal aunt, so that means the mother's sister. They were driven to a police station on April 19th, 2013, and they were told, "You're going to go live with your." I think it was at that point, not even living with your father, with your paternal aunt. Driven by the police, and then they ran, probably 20, 30 minutes later, and they were hidden for 2.5 years. But the entire phenomenon is based on judges insisting that people live with the abuser. And wow. I have seven cases. Look, it was a lengthy article. I could write a book on this. There's not seven cases. There's hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of cases. And the police have to get involved because that's the only way you're going to force these kids to go live in these environments.
You know, I've talked to many parents, like Dwight Mitchell has started an organization, Stop CPS from Legally Kidnapping Kids. And a lot of these individuals who have their kids taken away, their complaint is, in most of these cases, there isn't any allegation of abuse, physical or sexual. But the parents have the kids taken away, and they don't do the due process until later, if ever. I mean, this stretches that the kids are in custody or given to CPS or foster care for a very long time while the parents have to try to prove their innocence. And yet they justify this by saying, well, we got to get these kids and remove them from the abusive parents. And yet you're saying it's exactly the opposite in many of these cases. The court systems are putting the kids back with very violent, physically or sexually abusive parents.
That's exactly right, and Dwight is out of Minnesota, the same state as the Ruckey case. The court's version of abuse is not what a parent or anyone outside of the court system's version of abuse. In the Ruckey case, it was late August of 2012, Sandra Grazini Ruckey, and she goes by Sam, so Sam, that's the mother, she was told that she needed to go meet with a doctor named Paul Reitman. She meets with this guy for less than a half hour with four of her five kids. He asks each one of them a question. He then writes a note to the court that the situation is so extreme that we need to remove these kids. And then they hold it's called a telephonic conference. It's not really a hearing because there were no questions and answers. There was just four people speaking on September 5th. And on September 7th, there's an order ordering her out of the house ordering not even her ex-husband into the house, but his sister. And based on this guy's letter, that whatever he called it, parental alienation, but I don't know how you can diagnose anything in a half hour. But
yeah,
the main problem is, as you said, there's no due process, and these judges have so much leeway to do whatever they want. In the Rucki case, the even bigger problem is everyone from the Minneapolis Star Tribune to 2020, which did a story on this called Footprints in the Snow, have lied, flat out lied, and pretended like the evidence that David Rucki is abusive isn't there, when in fact it is. And when they're confronted, they just ignore it. So there's also some media that helps it out. They either ignore these stories or worse in the Rucki case.
Yeah, yeah. When you're talking about how the courts get it wrong and mm-hmm. how there isn't any due process, and again, you know, we ought to have a real court system, and people need to understand that these administrative courts, family courts, are not a due process. You don't have a presumption of innocence. You're not allowed to confront your accusers, because in most cases, the accusers are the bureaucrats themselves. And so we've had situations where, because there is a dispute within a family, one individual that I talked to, his mother-in-law wanted the child. The wife abandoned the family and abandoned the child, but the mother-in-law wanted the child, and so she would continually file these nuisance reports against him in one state. They said, all right, they interviewed him. They said, we understand what's going on. And it didn't become a problem until he went to another jurisdiction, and then that individual there with CPS made an issue out of it. It was eventually overturned. They said, well, we found out that, you know, there was absolutely nothing here after the child had been gone for about a year into the system. And then what they did was they turned the child over to the mother who didn't want the child in another state, and they terminated his parental rights to visit. I mean, this is absolutely insane. They're doing exactly the opposite of what we would hope or expect that they're doing.
You're absolutely right. And the other thing that people should know, often in these cases, there's one out of California, Madonna McCracken, and her ex-husband probably makes $100,000 a month. Often what happens is the powerful, the wealthy, which creates power, they control the courts. And the reason yeah. is these family courts, the administrative courts, they're courts of equity, not a court of law. It gives judges who already have way too much power as it is, even more power. And the other thing is, as opposed to criminal courts, the appeals courts rarely, if ever, will overturn whatever the judge did. They just say, well, they were there. They must know. So,
yeah. Yeah, they give carte blanche to these administrative courts, a bureaucracy that is basically its own accuser, its own police force. Of course, they get the police to come in and use force against these people, and then they won't overturn that. I think the best thing we can do, and we're going to, if you can stay for another segment at least, I want to get some more information, because the best thing we can do is get people to be aware of what is happening so we can get due process. We want to make sure we take the kids away from abusive parents, not turn them over to abusive parents. We'll be right back. Michael Volpe.
Engineering the high-tech takeover plan. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, I can remember seeing the movie Brazil. It was done by Terry Gilliam of Monty Python fame. It's kind of an over-the-top, kind of a satire, dark comedy version of 1984 when it first came out. And I thought it was really over the top, the way the armed police would kick in the door of somebody, mistaken identity, it turns out, destroy their life, you know, kidnap the guy, give him a receipt, this is our receipt for your receipt, so forth, and drag the guy off. That has actually become real life now. We have entered into that dystopian satire, quite frankly. We're going to talk. Our guest here is Michael Volpe. He is a freelance investigative journalist. He's written a couple of exposés of what's going on for Daily Caller. We're going to get into what a reunification camp is. Can you imagine something like this? We're not talking about China, folks. This is America. We're talking about SWAT teams kicking in the doors, taking children away from parents without due process. We're going to talk about the term parent alienator, what that really means, and the consequences of what that's had. But, Michael, before we get into that, we've got a short segment right now. We'll get into all that stuff in the next segment. Tell us about this case that you highlight in your Daily Caller article from last Thursday, this case of a woman in North Carolina who was jailed because she baptized her daughter in violation of a judge's order. Tell us about that case.
Right. The best way I can describe that is if the judge says one thing and you do another, then you are at the mercy of the judge. The judge said, don't do it. She did it. And there you go. In family or any civil court, that becomes contempt of court. And then you're at the mercy of the judge. I did a story. A guy was told not to put anything online about his father-in-law, and his father-in-law was involved in a murder in the 1960s, and he hired a man named Charles Harrelson, Woody Harrelson's father. And there was a note added to Charles Harrelson's Wikipedia page, and they said, well, you did it, and jailed him for 10 days. They didn't even have proof that he did it. And I do believe he did add it, but these kinds of stories are all over the place. You cross the judge, there is no constitutional protections.
Oh, yeah.
You're at the mercy of the judge. And look, they can jail 10, 20, 30 days, you can appeal it, but you'll be in jail until then. And so you can win the appeal 6 months later, but doesn't change. You've already been in jail.
That's absolutely amazing. Here in Texas, I've talked to the father. He's got a website called Save James. He's got a judge telling him, because the mother wants the young boy to transition to female, telling him that when the child turns 8, he is going to pay for hormone therapy to transition this kid irreversibly to medically castrate his son at the age of 8. And he says, I'm not going to do that. I mean, he's a Christian, but he also understands that, you know, this is something that ought to be done, even as we've got, internationally recognized psychologists saying this is something that ought to be done only after people make that decision when they're 21 years old, when they've had experience with this and so forth. So the father's saying, I'm not going to do it. He says, I fully expect to go to jail because I refuse to pay for my son's chemical castration. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of power they have.
That's exactly right. There's actually a case in Canada where a judge sanctioned a guy because he refused to call his son she after he transitioned. I don't remember what the sanction was, but similar thing. And that's something I want to point out. Family courts are not just problematic here in the U.S. They're all the so-called developed countries. Horror stories out of Australia, Britain, Canada. Don't think that we haven't figured it out, but they, you know, in the rest of the world, they've got it. They don't. It's all a product of how much power we allow judges to have, from the Supreme Court all the way down to the lowly judge in Minnesota and North Carolina, you name it.
Boy, that's been the theme of this show today so far. We've got more to talk about when we come back. Reunification camps. After they snatch the kids with a SWAT team, they take them to the reunification camp in America. We'll be right back.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're talking to Michael Volpe. He is a freelance investigative journalist, investigating the powerful. He's exposed abuses at the VA medical centers. They created a national debate. We're hoping that his detail series ran the Daily Caller last week is going to raise the awareness of people as to what has happened in our country. The judiciary, completely out of control in these family courts, charges of parent alienation and so forth, but also of taking our kids to reunification camps. He writes in his story here, a 2007 survey by the Leadership Council for Interpersonal Violence found that 58,000 children yearly, repeat that, 58,000 children yearly are placed into abusive homes by American family courts. So we're told, oh, we got to grab the kids and do the due process later. right? It's not just the guns are going to grab and do the due process later. They grab the kids. As one of the individuals that I talked to, CPS individual who is on a mission to get the kid away from the father, kept coming to the house, and he said, get a search warrant, you know, and came back with the police and said, get a search warrant. And then they kidnapped his kid from school, and the police officer said, I don't need a search warrant to kidnap your kid, only to get into your house. So you have to understand this. But I want to talk to Michael Volpe. Michael, tell us what happens at a reunification camp, and then we'll talk about how the kids get put there. But talk about what's going on in a reunification camp.
Sure. So basically what happens is the court has decided that one of the parents has been alienated. And in layman's terms, parental alienation is during divorce, one parent turns their child or children, however many kids they have, against the other parent. But one thing people should know, if you know the abortion debate in the family court realm, you amp the intensity up by 100 or 1,000. It's that intense, that debate over whether or not it's real. But the court has determined that the mother or the father is alienated, and so they don't have a good relationship with their kids. So before they are reunited, they go to these reunification camps. So number one, often these reunification camps are run by quacks. So one of the people I featured is Randy Rand. He's running the camp without a license. I didn't feature this woman, but there's a woman named Dorsey Pruder, and during a deposition, she said all she has is a high school diploma. That's all she has. She runs a reunification camp. So what happens at these camps is often they're either threatened or coerced. So the kids will hear the...
We're starting to lose him. We're starting to break up with the phone. Do you guys have him, or have we lost Michael? We're just getting to the point where he's telling us what happens at the reunification camp, and I really wanted to find out what's going on with that. You guys want to reestablish contact? Okay, so they're going to reestablish contact with him. Absolutely amazing. And again, one of the ways that they get the kids there is by the finding in a family court that there is parental alienation. Well, again, this is going to be something that's going to be very subjective. You think if you're in a very contentious divorce that there's a lot of alienation going back and forth? Of course there is. And so the police are going to grab the kids, put them into this reunification camp. But the biggest thing that we have to understand, if we understand, as Michael has detailed in his article here, many cases whereby using the term parental alienator, you know, you have a situation, two people that he talks about here, wives whose ex-husbands they divorced or left the family, only saw the kids sporadically over a period of several years. And then the husbands at some point decide that they're going to get the kids back, even though they haven't been involved in their lives. They accuse the mothers of parental alienation, and the children are forcefully removed from the mother, and they send them to these reunification camps. And now we've got Michael back on the line. Michael, tell us again, then what happens in these reunification camps? You point out that they don't go to a great deal of trouble to make sure these people are experienced or even licensed counselors. But what happens at the reunification camp?
Right. Before I get to that, it's primarily done to the mother, though I get more and more stories done to the father. But the kids are coerced or they're threatened. So the kids will hear, if you want to leave, the only way you're leaving is if you tell us your father loves you and your mother put these thoughts in your head, or if the mother is the one claiming alienation, your mother loves you and your father put these thoughts in your head.
Wow.
And that's the only way they'll leave. And it's basically mind control. The abuse isn't real. Often it's kids who say they were abused. So the abuse isn't real. It's not real. It's exactly like 1984.
You have to get people to embrace the doublethink. They have to say that 2 + 2 = 5. And this is why, as I said, it looks like something out of a communist country, because it is a communist type of tactic. And I think basically they're just practicing on these kids.
Can I explain what happened in the Rucci case? I didn't put this in the article. The Rucci case is 12 books. But when the girls were found in November of 2015, according to the police report, the first thing out of their mouth was, if you put us with our father, we'll run again. So, and then they kept repeating it to the judge, foster care, anyone. So before they could be placed with their father, they were placed in this reunification camp with a woman named Rebecca Bailey. And I looked her up for about 3 years. She was practicing without a license herself. And
wow.
So in order to get them to not run, they have to be placed in this reunification camp. But yeah, you are threatened. Anything that they can do to basically make the kids submit. And I talked to a mother, and her son, what he did was he played along because he was like, the only way I can get out is if I say what they want me to say. So he wasn't really paying attention, but he said, yeah, you're right. I really do love my father. My mother was putting these thoughts in my head, and that's how he got out of the camp.
Did he ever get back to his mother, though? Or did they alienate him from his mother?
Yeah, no, that's the other ironic thing. This idea of parental alienation, if you look at the results, what often happens is the person that they claim is alienating becomes, I wouldn't call it alienated, but they're erased. Sandra Gorzini Rucki hasn't seen any of her children since 2013. Donna McCracken, who I put in the article, I think 2-3 years. There's another woman, Kat Donovan. It's been over a year. And Paul Reitman, who was involved in the Rucki case, he was on a program in 2013, and he made this ironic statement. He said, what's the alternative? To say to the child at 11 or 12 years old, you cannot have a relationship with your father? And I think he used father at that point. And I actually emailed him, and I said, don't you understand how ironic it is? Based on your recommendation, the person you claimed was alienating is now, based on your definition, alienated. And here's how really devious this is. So Sam's daughter, Gianna, one of the two girls who ran, she's got a webpage on her University of Alabama website. She lists her four brothers and sisters. She lists her father. She doesn't even list that she has a mother. So who exactly is being alienated here? And yet, if you talk to the courts, the cops, and the media, including 2020, the problem parent is Sandra Gorzini Rucki. No one can explain to me why the alienator is the one who's completely erased, including from the webpage. No one can explain why all of these incidents of abuse have been ignored. But I don't know if you call it a collusion or conspiracy, but there seems to be a conspiracy to cover things up.
Yeah, and it's kind of a Kafkaesque court. You know, once you are labeled that, because there's no presumption of innocence, because there's no due process, because there's no jury, anything that we would put there as a check against the abusive state power, because none of that exists. They just accuse you of that. They kidnap your kids, send you to a reunification camp. When the kids say, yes, I like this other parent now, then you go to that parent that the kid was previously afraid of, and the other person is erased. Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Michael Volpe. I certainly hope that you do more stories on this, that we can raise people's awareness as to how the court systems are abusing us in yet another aspect of our life. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome back. You know, we've been talking about the abuse of the court system, talking about the crazy detailed interference into our lives by the Supreme Court. And then we just got finished talking to Michael Volpe, who's done a series of investigative reports as a freelance journalist about how the family courts are, without due process, without the presumption of innocence, are destroying families and destroying children's lives. In many cases, as I've talked many times to people like Dwight Mitchell, CPS, the police coming in, removing children without any due process when there's not even an allegation of physical or sexual abuse. And then the kids get put into foster care system where they are physically or sexually abused, as the parents have to fight to prove their innocence. But then the flip side of this is the other thing that Michael Volpe was talking about in family court. We have the charges of parental alienation. They take the kids away, put them in a reunification camp, demand that they denounce one parent and embrace the other and so forth. It's just absolutely insane the way the courts are interfering in every sphere of our lives. And we're going to take a look at that now with the wall, because now we've got a development on this private wall at the border that you've heard about. And remember, it was last week that we had the Trump administration. It was reported by Bloomberg, and they pushed back on this report. Bloomberg reported that there had only been 1.7 miles of fencing, new fencing, and that they'd spent $1.57 billion to do it. And I said, okay, well, at that rate, with 2,000 miles to do, that's going to take us about 2,000 years to do, about a mile per year, because we're 2 years into the Trump administration, so, you know, less than two miles built and almost $2 billion, so about, you know, 1 mile, $1 billion per year. Another 2,000 years, we might be there. Another $2 trillion, we might be there. The Trump administration pushed back, said, no, the Bloomberg article is wrong. The 1.7 miles are part of a 14-mile project. And they said there's currently over 120 miles of new or replacement wall being constructed. Being constructed. Still not finished, but at least they're working on it. But to say that only 1.7 miles is complete is false and misleading. Well, it's not false and misleading if they haven't completed the other walls. Where is the wall? No. Where's Waldo? DHS, as Breitbart points out, keeps the mileage of the newly built border wall a mystery. So they play semantic games. Well, it's being constructed or it's being reconstructed. And so Breitbart asked DHS, said for months, Customs and Border Patrol Agency has touted construction, saying that they've got 38 miles as of March 21st have been built along a 2,000-mile border. They said, yeah, well, this is fence that, quote, provides new capability by replacing ineffective or dilapidated infrastructure. In other words, replacing. So the repairing wall. No, where is the new wall built? Well, DHS will not respond with that. They said Breitbart News has made multiple requests to CPB officials. DHS has refused for months to reveal the mileage of new border wall that has been built in areas that previously had no wall. And they would not respond with total mileage of new border wall on new land in time for the publication. Meanwhile, they are releasing 100% of illegal immigrant families released in the United States. We are putting them on planes. We're flying them into the United States, not back home where these foreign citizens criminally trespassing come from. No, no, no. We're flying them into the United States at your expense, so we can enroll them into our court system, so we can enroll them into the welfare system. President Trump needs to pay attention to Ben Carson. He's taking a lot of flack for the fact that he's not going to let illegal aliens game the system in terms of welfare housing, because Ben Carson's is the head of HUD. That's what the Trump administration needs to do. That would be a win with American citizens of every stripe, from working blue-collar Americans to everyone else. Why should we be taxed? Why should we put foreign citizens ahead of American citizens when it comes to things like housing or food or education, which we do on a regular basis? If you are a dreamer, quote-unquote, there is no such thing as a dreamer, but if you're somebody here under the illegally continued DACA executive order by the Obama administration. Of course, the Obama-appointed judges tell President Trump, you can't take down that Obama executive order. Of course he can. And President Trump has overturned the executive order that was put in by Barack Obama to self-ratify the Paris Climate Treaty, to self-ratify the Iran Treaty, and so forth. Certainly he could do that. It's just an executive order. Each president can add new executive orders or repeal existing executive orders. And you don't have to listen to these judges, except there's a political reason that President Trump wants to listen to these judges. It isn't that they've got any authority. He just wants to do that. So they're releasing 100% of the immigrant families in. And not only that, But the acting Department of Homeland Security Secretary, Kevin McAllenin, I guess that's how you pronounce his name, says that they're giving them work permits. They're giving them places to live. I mean, this is ridiculous. So, in light of all this, you know, we've had President Trump say we're going to build a wall. Actually, we had 10 years before Trump, we had Biden saying we need to build a wall. And we need to punish American employers who hire illegals. And we need to make that border wall 40 feet high. Let's play that clip of Biden when he was telling people what everybody knows needs to be done. This is Biden back in 2006.
Okay. And so I think they're split. I don't know.
Let me talk to something unsavory now. The issue of immigration.
Yeah.
Is there a Democratic Party position which accommodates the need to stop illegal entry, punish people who hire people at cheap wages illegally, and also gives hope to people who live here illegally and people who want to come here right now? Is there a possible combination that hits all those points?
I think there is. And I think that the McCain-Kennedy bill, Kennedy-McCain, the Specter bill that came out does it. If you take a look, Chris, at what Frist is talking about, only enforcement. The enforcement provisions that sit inside the Specter bill, McCain, the Kennedy-McCain bill, there ain't a dime's worth of difference to them. They're the same amount of money, 12,000 new border agents.
Think they work?
Tougher. I think they will work better if they actually, in fact, do it.
Can you scare an employer in this country, whether he's an agricultural worker or a housewife, into not hiring an illegal because the punishment's so high that if you get caught,
yes,
it's a huge embarrassment to your family, and you may just get hit with a fine that'll kill you.
Yeah, absolutely, you can do that. And that's what we should do. Well, I think we should do that.
Because you can't catch
everybody. You can't. No, you can't. And the last part of this is that the Democratic position also recognized you got 11 million illegal aliens here. They have to have a way to earn their way into the deal. This is an amnesty. They're required to take 11 years worth. They pay a fine. They got to learn to speak English. They got to pass
tests. The English part.
Yeah.
I like the English part.
By the way,
if we want the problems of Canada right now, let's keep
it. All right, more on that when we come back. We've got to take a quick break. We'll talk about what the real solution is. And now we have a real solution from a private individual. We got the courts setting in and the judge stopping it. We'll be right back.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, we have Pope Francis now comparing the idea that we would have a border wall. Well, it's Trump's border wall, he says. He compares it to the Berlin Wall. Well, there's a couple of problems with this. Number one, the Pope has a wall as well, as we've pointed out many times, at the Vatican. Both the, you know, but the Berlin Wall was different than the Vatican's wall. The Berlin Wall was built to keep people in, to turn East Germany into a prison. The Vatican Wall is built to keep people out, like Trump's wall. There's a fundamental difference there. But, of course, it's horrible when President Trump does it. We just heard Joe Biden talking about how we needed to have, he was telling Chris Matthews back in 2006, he says, we've got to have something there. We've got American employers who knowingly violate the law when they hire illegals. We got to do something about that. The rest of this, if you don't do anything about that, it's just window dressing. And of course, Biden is going to attack the Republican base. And when I say the Republican base, it's not the rank and file voters. It's the people who contribute to the Republican Party that want open borders. The people who support Mitt Romney, who supported Paul Ryan for all these years. They want open borders, Republican corporations that are giving them money. They want to have cheap labor. And so he attacks the GOP side that wants cheap labor. Of course, you know, the Democrats want open borders because they want open voters. They want voters from other countries to come in and support them. He's not going to say anything about that. And then he bragged in 2006. He told a South Carolina Rotary Club that he was proud of the fact that he had voted for the Secure Fence Act. He said, I voted for a fence. I voted. Unlike most Democrats, and some of you won't like it, I voted for 700 miles of fence. But let me tell you, we can build a fence 40 stories high. Unless you change the dynamics in Mexico, you won't like this. You got to punish the American employers and so forth, and you've got to realize that the real issue doesn't have so much to do with immigration as it does with drugs. And he says everything from meth to cocaine to heroin is all coming up through corrupt Mexico. Well, I guess he never watched Breaking Bad. You know, meth, you can easily make that anywhere. And you don't need to get it from Mexico. It's just probably, you know, like the cheaper labor. They probably make meth cheaper just like they make cars cheaper. That's why the Republicans want to bring the goods and the workers through the border. But when he talks about how he voted for 700 miles of fence, okay, just think of, analyze that for a second. We got about 2,000 miles of border. So that means they're about 1,300 miles short. I don't call that a border. You know, you got 700 miles of wall and 1,300 miles of open door. What does that qualify as a wall? It's ridiculous. You hear the politicians saying this kind of stuff. They're pandering. They're telling you this because this is what the American people want. We want to have our southern border defended. We can send the military everywhere, but according to President Trump is still sending people. No complaints from Congress. And President Trump says, well, I'm going to send thousands of troops to monitor Iran. They don't say, you can't do that. We don't have a Supreme Court judge or a local federal judge that you can't do that. Nobody says that. But if he were to say, I'm going to send that same number of troops to the border to monitor the American border, they would melt down. And President Trump bows down to the court system. Again, that has been the theme of this entire show. From all these pronouncements by the Supreme Politburo, the Supreme Court, to talking about how they're taking away our children without due process and family courts, how they define everything, tell us where we can and cannot go to the bathroom, tell us what marriage is, define life, define when a child can be murdered and when they can't. Why are we giving these people this power? Why is President Trump allowing them to shut down any policy about immigration or protecting the border? That's not within their authority. And so we have a private individual who puts together a GoFundMe project and started to build the wall. As I talked about this briefly yesterday, Don Salazar's story at InfoWars.com looks at how he was slandered and mocked by the Daily Beast, by Ross Story, by Huffington Post. Listen to these headlines they put out. Shocker, the GoFundMe campaign to build a wall is a bust, and now the donors are demanding answers. Another one, that was Daily Beast, Ross Story. Trump fans have spent millions on a GoFundMe page for the wall, but it looks like they're getting duped. Huffington Post, donors to $22 million crowdfunded border wall wonder, where's the barrier? And of course, this is Air Force veteran Brian Colfagi, I believe, is the way he pronounced his name, triple amputee, who was encouraged by Facebook, enticed by Facebook to spend $300,000 on Facebook ads for his organizations, then just summarily pulled off of that explanation. But he gives us an explanation about the wall because we saw the wall being built. Let's run some of that video that we have, video number 6.
We are morning of day 2 on project number 1 of We Build the Wall, Sunland Park, New Mexico. Yesterday, we completed the first section. This was done relatively late at night. We started putting the pieces in place at 5 p.m. Concrete came in at about 8 or 9 p.m. and then it hardened within 2 hours. Now we're morning of day 2. If you look here, you've got the rigs of Fisher Industries coming in. They're basically modified giant.
See, he's actually showing pictures of a physical wall. This is not in his mind. They're actually constructing this wall.
Each section
it can
is
5 8-foot
panels. So that's 40 foot per section. This pour, this we call it a pour because you put them all in place. The rigs hold them in place. This pour.
All right, let's hold it at that point. It's kind of hard for people who are listening to the broadcast. But the bottom line is you can hear the beeping in the background. He shows the wall. It's already hardened into place. He's pointing it out. It's a physical wall. It's not in the mind of a politician. It's not a promise. It's a physical wall. And yet now we have, guess what? The court system. Coming in today, here's the update. The half-mile private border wall that sprung up over Memorial Day weekend has now been hit with a cease and desist order yesterday. At this point, they said it'll be turned over to the courts, as everything in our lives are turned over to the courts, to our unelected, unaccountable masters in black robes, telling us what we can and cannot do, telling even the president what he can and cannot do. And again, that would be the most important thing, I think, of the presidency with President Trump. It's the only way he's going to get his border built is if he stands up to this judicial usurpation of power. One branch of the federal government cannot overrule the other two and overrule all the states and all the people. That has to be stopped. And that's the only way that the wall is going to be built. Even when a private individual raises the money from the people and starts to build it. And he said on Twitter, he said, we were given the green light to build. He goes, here we go again. Liberals trying to intimidate us. Sound the alarm. The governor trying to flex his muscle. The city of Sunland Park said that we had no permits trying to shut us down. BS, he said. They were on the site on Friday and they gave us the green light to build. So according to Brian Kolhaji, they had the city officials on site on Friday, gave them the green light to build. They built it over the weekend. They did the video of it. Everybody was talking about it. Look, finally, it takes somebody who is a private individual to get this done. The politicians don't do anything but talk, because the politicians are listening to the judges who tell them you can't do that. And so then after the local officials gave them permission to do it, then the governor gets involved, starts talking to the local officials, and the local officials say, oh, well, actually, we didn't give you the permission to do that. So you got to stop, and we're going to put it into the courts. Into the courts. That's where everything gets drugged. Into the courts. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're going to take a look at a statement made by Bob Mueller, and we got a video clip of that. And I want to finish up with Joe Biden is saying to do for foreign citizens criminally trespassing here in terms of giving them free health care. California says the same thing. Ben Carson is saying, I think we need to take care of our own first when it comes to housing. And, of course, he's getting a lot of pushback from the press, from the Democrats, and so forth. Before we get to all of this, I just want to tell you about the sale that we have still from Memorial Day, a mega sale for Memorial Day. We've got many products 40, 50, 60% off at InfoWarsStore.com, and that's what funds this program. Folks, you are our only sponsors, and if you don't sponsor us, this program will not be here. We've got, let me give you some of the 60% sales, because we tried to make it as much of a win-win proposition as we can. Things to help your health, natural, effective, and discounted deeply. 60% off for ExtendaWise, for Myco ZX Plus. We have 50% off on Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, a great way to get all your vitamins and minerals without taking a lot of pills. We also have 50% off Bodies, our all-natural anti-inflammatory supplement. Turmeric and many other natural ingredients that are very effective. Now 50% off for Bodies. We have Turbo Force, 40% off. Our protein bars, 40% off. And just for the listeners of this program, we have our Wake Up America coffee, 10% off. If you use the code WAKEUP at checkout, you can save 10% off of either the Patriot Blend or the Immune Support Blend. 100% organic Wake Up America coffee. Just use the code WAKEUP to save 10%. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Libertarian, and on YouTube. Subscribe to Libertarian. And, of course, you can find our shows also on InfoWars.com/David-Knight-show. All right. So we were talking about Biden, and he's saying, back in 2006, we need to have a wall and so forth. I'm very proud of the fact that I built a wall across one-third of the border. I voted to do that. Of course, they didn't really do that. But, yeah, we voted to build a wall across a third of the border, but that leaves two-thirds of it wide open. He's saying we need to punish employers. I agree with that. But, of course, he's not going to do anything to stop the welfare magnet that is pulling people across the border. And as I've said before, you can build that wall, and Joe, you can build that wall 40 stories high. But just like we've got the cheap labor subsidizing the employers who are hiring these people, if you, Joe, are subsidizing this with free health care, free housing, free food, free education, these people are going to find a way to get in. And I don't care what kind of wall you build. See, that's what the real answer to all of this stuff is. I'm very concerned that not because the Pope is saying, well, it's immoral to have a wall. Well, you know, again, he's got a wall. He's got a wall to keep people out. The Berlin Wall was to keep people in. I don't want this wall at the border being used to keep us in. And the key thing is we just need to stop incentivizing this. Stop incentivizing it for business. Stop incentivizing it for the Democrats. Don't allow them to count these people to get political power. Don't allow them to use these people to get voters. Don't incentivize it for the individuals by offering them all of these free goods. You're just using a magnet for the anchor babies. But that's exactly what they're doing. He is saying that we have an obligation. An obligation, he said about a month ago, 3 weeks ago. An obligation, says Joe Biden, to give foreign citizens free health care here in the United States. Well, that's very easy to bankrupt us. And, of course, he's saying that in California, where they believe that as well. California is looking at giving health care for illegal immigrants. They're going to start with by raising the age at which they give free health care to everybody. Well, that's a prescription for bankruptcy. And, of course, they knew that. That's why Cloward and Piven started doing this. They said, we can get everybody on the socialist welfare system. We can collapse the society, and we can rebuild our socialist utopia. Couldn't do it with Americans, so they decided they would incorporate foreign citizens. They were open about it 10 years ago, and now that's what's being implemented. So Joe Biden is on with that agenda from California. Meanwhile, in the Trump administration, they've been talking about how they're going to redefine the poverty level, which is indexed to inflation. They said they're going to recalculate the way they do that, which would mean that the poverty level doesn't rise as rapidly as it has in the last several decades since the 1960s. So again, the Democrats are very upset about that. And I think that before President Trump does that, I don't support the welfare state in any way, shape, or form. There's no constitutional authority for it. And I think that even though charity is needed, it needs to be practiced by private organizations, private individuals. Why would we allow the government to rob us, not of money, but of the joy of giving to people? I mean, that was what America was about in the early 1800s when Alexis de Tocqueville came here. He said that was what was different about America. People would voluntarily organize. They would take care of the needy in their community. And I don't want to have that taken away from me by the federal government. But the right way to do this, I think, is exactly what Ben Carson is doing. And this is coming from the White House. It's a proposal to eliminate illegal immigrants from public housing. And Ben Carson says, we've got to take care of our own first. That's really what America first means. Americans first. We're going to give, if we're going to have a welfare state, let's make sure that we take care of every single American before we open up the floodgates and before we make it available to everyone in the world who wants to come here and get free stuff. But of course, Maxine Waters says that is a cruel proposal. No, it is a winning proposal if President Trump were to follow through on that. Before we run out of time, I want to play the Mueller statement that he made. Let's run that clip.
2 years ago, the acting attorney general asked me to serve as special counsel, and he created the special counsel's office. The appointment order directed the office to investigate Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. This included investigating any links or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the Trump campaign. Now, I have not spoken publicly during our investigation. I'm speaking out today because our investigation is complete. The Attorney General has made the report on our investigation largely public. We are formally closing the special counsel's office, and as well, I'm resigning from the Department of Justice to return to private life. I'll make a few remarks about the results of our work. But beyond these few remarks, it is important that the office's written work speak for itself. Let me begin where the appointment order begins, and that is interference in the 2016 presidential election. As alleged by the grand jury in an indictment, Russian intelligence officers, who were part of the Russian military, launched a concerted attack on our political system. The indictment alleges that they used sophisticated cyber techniques to hack into computers and networks used by the Clinton campaign.
Pause it right there. So sophisticated that William Binney, who was the global technical head of the NSA for decades, in his own test said it couldn't have been done. It was impossible. You know, it's kind of like buildings falling in their footprint. Three of them, when only two of them were hit by a plane. But, you know, that's exactly what they are selling us. And it's amazing to me how many in the Republican Party will go along. Well, yes, of course, the Russians use very sophisticated techniques, and they use robots and ads. You know, they took out a couple of thousand ads on Facebook. Forget about the fact that Facebook and Google were rigging the election. Forget about the fact that you had everybody on establishment media, from New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, all these people in concert, slandering President Trump, pushing back on him on everything. Oh, yeah, they weren't interfering with the election. They were exercising their free speech, and I'm all for that, quite frankly. But to say that a few ads that were taken out on Facebook manipulated the election, or to push the lie that they hacked into the DNC and told us the truth about Hillary Clinton, if that is rigging the election, then bring it on. Bring it on. Let's go back to the rest of what he has to say here.
Stole private information and then released that information through fake online and identities and through the organization WikiLeaks.
Who told us the truth? You lied to us, Mueller.
To interfere with our election and to damage a presidential
They interfered by telling us the truth because the election was about lies.
At the same time, as the grand jury alleged in a separate indictment, a private Russian entity engaged in a social media operation where Russian citizens posed as Americans in order to influence.
Well, I'll believe that you're serious about that when you indict Mark Zuckerberg, who is posing as an American. But he wants to be the world's Caesar. That's it for the show. Thanks for joining us.